understand exactly if I were in that batter's box and I'm going to try and take a viewer into that batter's box, I want to make sure I understand exactly what that movement, what that depth, velocity, all of those things meant. And that was something I was pretty much obsessed with this offseason. And what's important to me, like if I'm going to get criticism, I want it to come from either internally, like if someone's going to reach out at ESPN and say, hey, like I was watching this, maybe we could work better with that. I think that this is going to be a long road for me if I listen to every reaction, critical or not. There's a guilt that I think women carry more so than men, just because of the stereotype of wanting to be at home and be that classic mom.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Bette Marston. And this week, our guest is the ESPN Sunday Night Baseball analyst, Jessica Mendoza. She is with Dan Shulman and Aaron Boone on ESPN's lead team. Obviously, Jessica Mendoza's story is interesting in that she's the first woman to call a national baseball broadcast or a broadcast on the national level. Susan Wallman in New York calling Yankees games for their radio for a long time. But Mendoza is, she is a pioneer. She's walking on ground that no one has walked before her, at least in terms of on a gender level. And we're going to get into a lot of topics from her preparation to what it's like for her in social media, what it's like facing criticism, both for her content as well as for her gender. We'll talk about the differences between calling softball and baseball. She worked on ESPN's College World Series coverage for a long time. And if you don't know this, Jessica Mendoza is one of the great softball hitters in the history of this country, an Olympian multiple times, and a true big-time athlete in that sport. I've interviewed her a number of times. She's a thoughtful, thoughtful person, in my opinion. I have no doubt that she will answer honestly in terms of every question we ask her. So I'm looking forward to this. She is somewhere in beautiful California. And without further ado, let's bring on Jessica Mendoza. Okay, and as promised, the ESPN MLB analyst Jessica Mendoza joins us from somewhere in beautiful California. Jessica, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
All right, one of the things, Jessica, we talk a lot about on this podcast is process and preparation. Of like the 50 or so guests I've had, they all have a unique process of how they do what they do. You do a sport where preparation is really, really important, given the length of the season, given the number of players, and given the amount of time that you have in a broadcast to talk compared to other analysts, let's say the NBA and the NHL, where you don't get as much time during plays. So my first question for you is, how do you prepare for a broadcast? Let's assume it's the Sunday broadcast you just had, the Astros and the Red Sox. So take me as in-depth as you can when that preparation for that game starts.
Well, it's funny. it starts usually about Saturday or Sunday the week before. Even though we have our game Sunday of that week, so I guess 9 days ahead of time. Even though, for this week, I'm going in doing Red Sox Astros, I was already kind of thinking about, some of the ideas. I have a great producer, Andy Reichwald, that's allowed me to kind of bring some ideas to the table each week, and so I take that to heart. So I want to kind of get a jump start on some of the stuff that we're going to do, and because of that, usually it takes time. So something I just did with Carlos Correa this last week was that I really wanted to talk about, everyone throws out ideas like five tools. This guy's a five-tool guy. I wanted to come up with, three distinct things that Carlos does, but I wanted to, visually show it in a unique way. Well, that was, a six-day process between, me in California, someone in Bristol trying to build it. So I understand that for me to really, do the things I want to do, it takes a lot of time. So to get in, back to your question, it starts about 8 days before, thinking about the next week. What kind of creative different things can we do to showcase, whether it's the stars or like a point that we want to make, knowing that with technology it could take some time. And then come in, you know, Monday, I'm usually flying back from a game. I'm usually on the plane just kind of going over what happened over the weekend with the teams that I'm going to see, because I usually was so honed in on my team. Are my teams that we had, usually because we were on air, so I wasn't. So I kind of follow up a little bit with that, and start to take notes of points that I want to get into. Then Tuesdays are big because that's usually the starting pitchers that we're going to see on Sunday. So I record both of those games, and those are big for me, especially not being a pitcher. I really, really break down, hone in on their tendencies, things I'm picking up, start to kind of delve a little bit more, ask questions. We have a fantastic K-Zone producer who is a minor league pitcher. His name's Dave Swanson. I'll usually get on the phone with him and just kind of make sure that I'm on the same page with, like, understanding, you know, pitch-wise tendencies, everything that I'm seeing. We'll pull up video and just kind of go over stuff. Then Wednesdays for me tends to be a lot of just like big picture. What's happening in baseball? My big thing for our Sunday night broadcast is, yes, we have two teams, and yes, it's the end of a three-game series, but what's been happening this week? Like, I take it as a responsibility that knowing a lot of people tuning in weren't paying attention to maybe the fact that Trevor Story just hit 7 home runs or whatever is happening that week in baseball that stands out to me too, that I get excited about, kind of start to like take some notes and focus in on some of the bigger storylines to follow. Thursdays we have our production calls. They last anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours, going over the teams, going over everything that we're going to want to talk about. It's kind of an open forum. There's about, I'd say, 25 to 30 people on the call, not that everyone speaks by any means. But depending on the week and what we're going through, we kind of just, it's mostly run obviously by our producer, but Aaron Boone and I and Dan Shulman and Buster Olney will kind of be the main speakers of things that we want to delve into. And even like discussions, you know, Boone and I will get into some discussions that maybe we agree or disagree on, and that can kind of lead to maybe where we want to lead in the game. Especially the disagreements, I think that can be kind of cool for a viewer, like take a side, what do you think? And then Fridays I travel. I because it's important for me to be in the clubhouse on Saturdays for the team that we're going to see Sunday. And I'm in California, so usually that means flying out Friday so that I can get in Friday night. Right. And if it's a 1 o'clock game, I'll be at the clubhouse 8:39 in the morning on Saturday. Just kind of hanging out. No real agenda. I like that. Sunday, we're so much programmed to talk to certain players and managers, obviously. Saturday, I kind of like the idea of just feeling them out, seeing what the pulse is like, maybe talk to some guys around the cage, catch the manager if I can, and just have a chat. Our whole crew isn't usually there yet. I mean, a lot of them are, but not everybody, so it's not like we've taken over quite yet. So I really appreciate those Saturdays. And then I get to kind of take in the game. I think the coolest thing about doing Sunday Night Baseball is there is a series, you know, and for me, I haven't been to a lot of these parks. So, like, I was in Houston at Minute Maid Park this last weekend. I'm going to Fenway for the first time this weekend, which is, for me, I'm coming in Wednesday because I'm a nerd, and I really want to take in a lot of it and have a chance to do that, so that I'm ready to go Sunday. And then, obviously, Saturday night we'll usually do like a big team dinner, which I love. Being an athlete and being part of a team, I really, really like the fact that this crew emphasizes the fact that we are kind of a family on the road. I think that's really big, especially for me, because building chemistry with Boone and Dan and everybody, you know, getting them to get a feel for me and me a feel for them. We spend time having dinner, you know, talking about everything. And that's big. That's something that I haven't always had. And I really, really appreciate that with this crew. And then, sorry, I'm going.
No, it's good. It's good. No, it's a podcast, so we want you to go along.
Well, Sunday mornings we wake up, we have our final production meeting, going over everything. We kind of went over Thursday, making sure everything's in line for the game, any last thoughts we want to get into. That's usually an hour and a half or so. And then I usually kind of stick around after the meeting, get with our Kezo producer again just to make sure the pitching stuff, usually going over some of the bullpen stuff, maybe some packages I want to get into. And then also our ISO producer, which is who does our, like when I want to hone in on a hitter, like I did with Jock Peterson when we had a Dodger game, and I wanted to maybe draw some lines, really focus in on, hey, let's look at his back knee or his posture. I'll have a list of things that I might want to get into in the game, and it's reactive, but that way they're ready to go, and they know what camera angle, where I'm headed with each individual hitter, or even like a defensive shift, depending on the game. So I kind of stay after the meeting with our ISO producer to go over all of that. And then get ready for the game. Head over there about 5 hours before, and I do an interview with a player. Right when I get there, I get to kind of pick the player each week, which is fun. I try to make those super casual, and then it's like 5 hours goes like 5 minutes. So all the stuff, our Baseball Tonight stuff, and interviews with managers, and it's like it always goes too quickly. Like I'm just, you know, but then all of a sudden first pitch is here, and here we go.
That's a comprehensive look. That's a busy week, and there's a couple things I want to pick out from that. First one is chemistry is so important when it comes to a broadcasting crew. And in your whatever it's been 8 years at ESPN, if I'm wrong on my date, I apologize. You've worked with softball group, Beth Mounds, I think Michelle Smith. You were on Baseball Tonight in the studio, so you worked with multiple people there. And now, obviously, your partners are Dan Schulman and Aaron Boone. In particular, with Schulman and Boone, knowing full well that this is an important property for ESPN and that you want to get the chemistry right, how did you approach it when you were named to that team? Did you immediately call them in the off season to try to get to know them? Did you spend time with them before you went on the air? What did you find was the way to try to get chemistry existing before you actually went on the air?
Well, it helped that Dan and I had about five games at the end of last year, which was big for me just to get an idea. I mean, he's our quarterback, you know, he's the one leading everything, setting us up, kind of weaving in and out. It's important that he knows, like, where my strengths, where my weaknesses, where, you know, I want to get better, just kind of that communication. So I kind of met with him before our first game together, Sunday night, the Dodgers-Cubs, Arrieta no-hitter. I met with him, actually. I asked to get a couple hours with him leading into that game, even though I found out I was doing that game like 2 days before. But it was important for me to make sure at that time, even though it was kind of a quick get-to-know, I'd never met him before, let alone sat in a booth with him, let alone done that game. So it was a lot of firsts, but he was so easy. He just made it so, like, you know, there's a lot of egos, as you probably know better than me sometimes in this business. And he just had an ease to him, knowing that this was kind of a curveball being thrown at him. That was kind of a crazy week, and I was different, and he was just as interested to know me and my tendencies as I was to know his. But what I found out about Booney, we did a game together last year with actually John Shombe. So me, Dan, and Aaron had never worked together, but Booney and I had, and we had done Baseball Tonight studio stuff together. And we worked the College World Series at Omaha. We spent 2 weeks together the last 2 years. That was huge, because Omaha is like one of those places where you're there for 2 weeks, you know, like you get a lot of time with everyone, similar to the Women's College World Series, a little longer. And that helped, because I knew his personality. I knew that we were going to have some fun, like, which was important to me in a baseball game, like to not forget that this is fun, you know. And that was something that I was really looking forward to in working with him, was knowing we're going to break down knowledge, we're going to get into some stuff, but we're also going to take a moment to laugh and enjoy the game too.
Jessica, there's a you've told this story before, but for the purposes of this podcast, I think it's relevant. You and the one of the heads of ESPN's baseball production, Phil Orleans, am I pronouncing his last name right?
Yes.
Yeah, you guys basically constructed a plan a couple of years ago to try to change your trajectory on broadcasting. Rather than just be thought of and known as a sideline reporter, you two sort of started talking about the idea of getting you in the studio and then ultimately getting you some reps on a game broadcast. We'll get to this sort of part later. Obviously, everyone knows you are the first woman to call baseball on for a national network on a national level. Susan Waldman has done it locally. But can you take me through the process of a couple of years ago when you sat down with Phil Orleans and started thinking about, okay, I don't want to just sort of morph into what has always traditionally been a role for females. I would like to do something different and unique, given my skill set.
Well, and I give Phil a lot of credit for that, because I sat in his office not knowing him. I mean, I think it was one of the first times I'd ever met him, and he had just come on to take over to be the coordinating producer for Major League Baseball. Mike McQuaid had just left that position to go over to SportsCenter. So I'd spoken with Mike in the past about, you know, getting more involved. And when I sat down with Phil, I was, you know, a little nervous, like, you know, new leadership. I'm definitely different. And we talked about that. You know, he was kind of trying to wrap his mind around how to utilize me. And I just was very much pushing at the time. I just want to be a part of baseball. And in that moment, Richard, it wasn't even so much for me. I wasn't even thinking the booth at all. I love the game, and I really enjoy, I feel like, the unique perspective I can bring. And even if it was on a sideline or in the studio or anywhere, I just wanted to be a part of it. But I wanted to be an analyst. That was my big point. I didn't want to be just a reporter. I definitely wanted to analyze the game. And he came back to me in that meeting, that first meeting, with, Jess, if you want to be an analyst, you're serious about it, then we need to put you in the booth. Because the only way, I mean, you could break down every hitter, you could get in anything you want from the sideline, but at the end of the day, no one will really understand what role you're in, because you're on the field. If you're in the booth, that's when people are going to know that you truly are an analyst and that you are bringing knowledge to this game beyond what you would be on the field. And I kind of just sat there surprised, to be honest with you, because I hadn't even, my brain hadn't even gone there yet. I just wanted to be part of the game. So I credit him to throwing it out there. And I kind of even, it caught me off guard. And of course I'm like, well, let's do it. Even though there was a huge part of me that was incredibly nervous. Like, Jess, it's really, are you ready? Are you ready to do this? And I wasn't sure if I was, but I was gonna get there. That's for sure.
What have you found so far to be the biggest adjustments from broadcasting softball to broadcasting baseball?
I would say, I mean, one of the more obvious, it's not so much about the game as it's the time. You know, in a softball game, I feel like you don't have as much time to get into stuff because the game moves so much quicker and it's only 7 innings. So a lot of times I found that, like, oh, man, I didn't even get into this, starting into that. Whereas in a baseball game, I'll bring a lot of stuff, and usually I'll be able to get in pretty much everything we needed to do, just because the length of the game, the pace of the game allows you to kind of delve a little bit deeper. But obviously the pitching would be the other component. To me, it's not that it's different from a hitter's perspective. It was me understanding basically, if I'm going to talk about, you know, a cutter or a slider, I needed to be able to understand those pitches because they were called different names when I hit, like when I'm looking at, even though the movement was the same. So even though I'm not going to be a major league pitcher or understand all the nuances of being a major league pitcher, and I don't think you would expect Aaron Boone or any other hitter to be that way, I had to understand exactly, if I were in that batter's box and I'm going to try to take a viewer into that batter's box, I want to make sure I understand exactly what that movement, what that depth, velocity, all of those things meant. And that was something I was pretty much obsessed with this offseason, was really understanding the pitching aspect and the mindset and kind of exactly how everything worked.
Forgetting about gender for a second, Jessica, if we can, what have you noticed about how, whether it's viewers or even people within the business, how do they view analysts who did not play in the major leagues? Tom Verducci is somebody who reached the highest level of Fox's booth as an analyst. He did the World Series. He never played in the majors. You have Baseball Insiders, Tim Kirkjian, Keith Law, Buster Olney, never played in the majors. This, as you know, is something beyond just being a woman that you get tagged on, this idea that if you didn't play in the majors, how could you be a game analyst? So what have you sort of learned, or what has been your impression of how people feel about somebody in the booth who does not have major league experience?
Well, it's interesting, you know, just watching the World Series and being on site, and having, you know, Fox with Tom and Harold doing the games. And yeah, like you hear a reaction, you know, you hear this reaction of he never played, like, you know, people. And that really bothered me because obviously I felt like I was in that same group. And a lot of times it wasn't so much because of a point that he made that maybe they felt was wrong, which I think that's a little more like, okay, like, come at him with, like, I disagree with that, or I don't think what you said was right. But don't just cut him off, like, you know, you're listening to it on a TV, so he doesn't know you're cutting him off. But, here he is talking again. He doesn't know anything. He didn't even play. Have you ever been, you know, just attacking him? And that, to me, is ignorance in any sense. I think that, yeah, I think there's a place definitely where you want to hear from someone who was actually in those shoes. I agree. But what Tom brings, what Keith brings, what Buster, Tim, I mean, everyone that I've heard that's outside of that realm of someone who actually plays the game brings something unique. And I think that is important because what I do hear is a lot of the players that they tend to go down a lot of the same paths, the same things that you've heard. And I think there's a place for that. But I also think it's kind of cool when you get a Keith Law just getting into some stuff that I've never heard that before. You can agree, you can disagree, but it sparks conversation, it sparks interest. And I think baseball needs that.
Sports Illustrated has a new miniseries that takes you much deeper than any NFL draft. Big Board, listen to Draft Season, where each pick is a player and each player has a story. The latest episode features former Penn State quarterback Christian Hackenberg and his experience convincing teams that he can be the face of their franchise. Draft Season, it will be worth listening to even after the draft. It will be interesting to see where these guys go. So you can find Draft Season on iTunes, Google Play Music, or at si.com/draftseason. Jessica, how often do you read or hear criticism about your work on either a daily basis or a weekly basis?
Well... I've tried to stay off Twitter more than I've ever, and I've always enjoyed social media just because as when I was an Olympian, I loved interacting with fans and feeling like, you know, I was someone that they could talk to and reach out. You kind of have conversations over social media. Now, mostly when I get off air, I'm still on Twitter and I'll go on it definitely. But like last night, or after a Sunday night game, I just avoid it completely just because I know, like, I'm going to get these 140 character, positive, negative, but usually something extreme, that don't have a lot of substance behind it. And what's important to me, like, if I'm going to get criticism, I want it to come from, you know, either internally, like if someone's going to reach out at ESPN and say, hey, like, I was watching this, maybe we could work better with that. I think that this is going to be a long road for me if I listen to every reaction, critical or not, just because, you know, I'm human and I don't want to let that affect what I'm doing, especially emotionally. I don't want to bring that into it. And unfortunately, a lot of criticism tends to pull out emotion rather than just, for me, what I'm used to being criticized, not criticized, but what's the right word? I'm used to, you know, as an athlete, someone coming and telling me what I need to do better, I guess, would be the right way. Constructive criticism.
How much?
I don't do well with just straight criticism.
How much have you found criticism to be content-based versus gender-based?
I feel like I haven't read a lot. I mean, that is content-based. Every now and then, like there was a thing I was talking about with a double play ball this last Sunday night game. So there were a couple things in there that, you know, I disagree or that I appreciate. because that's exactly why, you know, Boone and I got into a discussion. He disagreed. It was good. It was good. Like, I like that. But yeah, I think the rest of it is just like, shut up and just, you know, like, you're stupid. You know, just stuff that's like, I don't know if it's gender-based or if they just feel that way about me, but it's not, it doesn't have anything that, for me, that's why I tend to not even look at it, but I could speak my teeth into and actually help to get better.
I often wonder if maybe being a professional athlete, and obviously you were an Olympian and one of the great softball hitters in history, is being an athlete helpful in the situation when you see people, even anonymous people on social media, taking shots at you to sort of rub that off? Because, you know, if you're an NBA player, you've heard the worst things imaginable on the court. So if nothing else, if you see, read something on social media, it may bother you for a second, but it's not like anything you haven't heard. So does your athletic background, or has your athletic background helped steel you a little bit when you've either read stuff or heard stuff?
I'd say that athletic background's probably more helped in like more of the moment, like when I need to like be on air and there's a lot of talk around, distractions, whatever. Just to me, like when you're up to bat at an Olympic Games and you've got 20,000 people screaming and so much around, like distraction wise, to be able to hone in on one pitch, maybe a few seams on a ball, like really get micro in a very macro moment, I feel like that's where it's helped me. When my heart rate's up and my adrenaline's going and I feel like sometimes, can I really do this? And all of a sudden I just focus in on the game itself. And it's like, I've been able to, over the years as an athlete, figure out how to do that. And I feel like that was probably one of my biggest assets, was to be able to have that fine-tuned focus. But I think with the criticism part, it's not so much the athletic background as it is just life. Just coming through and knowing that not everyone's going to like me, and that if I, like taking this on, was getting outside of my comfort zone, was doing something different. And I knew the moment I decided to do that, and I've been that person my whole life, I've always gone like the other way. I've always been, ask my parents, I've always gone the path that like no one else paved. You know, that's me. And in doing that my whole life, like, has always met resistance. And there's a part of me that kind of feeds off of it. Like, I don't know, it's maybe something a little crazy, but I kind of like that not everyone likes it.
Yeah, I actually think that's very similar to a lot of very competitive and successful athletes, actually. I don't think it's as dissimilar as you might imagine among really type A people. All right, just a couple more here on this subject and moving on to a couple other things. Have you had to deal at all, Jessica, with people thinking that you are somehow responsible for Curt Schilling no longer being with ESPN?
No, I mean, like, I think social media is where I've heard it the most, even as far as recently, people just tagging both of us, connecting us with, like, whether it's, I don't even know if it's so much him leaving as me, like, if I'm on a game and they're just always comparing the two of us. And when he was doing games, they would remark and they'd tag me on it too, like as if him and I are in direct competition. And but I haven't found it outside of that. I think just probably like on Twitter, just people trying to throw both of us at the same group.
You, if I'm correct about this, you guys had a pretty good relationship, and he was helpful to you at different times, correct, in terms of talking pitching and stuff like that. Am I correct in my characterization?
Yeah, I was really impressed with Curt. We'd worked together the Women's College World Series this last year and came in and did softball. And it's just crazy how much, you know, our paths were going to be tied from then on out. But when he was first suspended and I did that Dodgers-Cubs game, you know, I called him because, you know, I had 2 days to prep, and I called a lot of people, but I wanted to ask him, you know, a little bit about Arrieta, a little bit about handling being on Sunday night, just any advice he had. And he probably spent over an hour on the phone with me. Really, you know, helpful, you know, just all kinds of stuff, things to look for. And he didn't have to do that. And he did. And I really appreciated him, you know, just being able to be someone that genuinely I felt like wanted me to do well.
How have you and your family managed the idea of your pretty heavy travel schedule versus raising young kids. I think you have your kids are like under the age, a couple kids under the age of seven. And so, I'm not showing any kind of gender bias by asking you this question as opposed to asking some, you know, same 40-year-old guy who has two kids. But it's, you know, it's interesting because you really in baseball have a very significant travel job. At the beginning of this podcast, you talked about what a given week is like for you and when you arrive in cities. So how have you been able to manage that as the mother of a couple of young kids, yet with this really high profile, you know, incredibly cool job that does take you traveling to different cities?
It's not easy. I mean, it's definitely helped that from day one, I've always been a traveling, the first three years of my 6-year-old's life, I was a pro athlete, you know, and on the national team still. So they traveled a lot with me, but his first 3 years of his life, we were living in Florida half the year, living in California. We were everywhere from Venezuela to, you know, all over the world. And now it's different, I think, because of the intensity. When I'm home, you know, I always taken every job incredibly serious, but this one's another level. And, you know, it hasn't been easy. I mean, the last thing I want to say is, yeah, we've got it figured out. It's been great. I mean, there's times when I'm missing them like crazy or I'm missing baseball games. There's stuff that I'm definitely wishing I was a part of. But I have this amazing husband who I can't even tell you how much of a rock he is for us. He's a stay-at-home dad now. You talk about role reversals. He quit his job as a civil engineer to help kind of every dream that I wanted to be able to do within this business, I wouldn't be able to do unless he had done that. And it was his decision. But anyway, he's at home with them, and he reminds me all the time of how fine everything is because I put that guilt. And I agree with you, Richard. I don't think it's a sexist question because I think that it's different to be the mom versus the dad. I think every mom and dad is different also, but there's a guilt that I think women carry more so than men, just because of the stereotype of wanting to be at home and be that classic mom and criticism. I mean, I get more. I have a mommy and me class that I go to on Tuesdays with my 2-year-old, and all the time, you know, I'll sit down with some of the moms and be like, you weren't here for the last couple of weeks. Like, how can you leave your child, you know? And I get these questions that are so like, wow. But when my husband's there, they would never ask, you know, him or, you know, anyway. So that's what I deal with. But at the same time, I have a support system around me that I feel like has helped make me feel like these kids are getting everything they need. Plus, they do come with me. I mean, there's a few trips we have planned where they can come and see mom. My 6-year-old can't wait. He's not super into baseball, but he's like, mom, I just want to see you in the booth. Like, I think it's so cool to see you in the booth. And I love that. I love that they're going to get a unique, especially two boys, seeing what their mom is doing. I think there's something special there, too.
Yeah, that's going to be really cool for them as they get a little bit older. And I appreciate you being honest with that answer. I have very young twins, so you know, as a fairly new parent, it's interesting to see the whole dynamic and how they react to me and how they react to my wife. So I know where you're coming from, and I appreciate that. All right, a couple more here. We'll finish this up with questions that I got for you on social media from people when I let them know that you were going to be on the podcast. First up, do you have any plans to do a regular baseball podcast for ESPN in the future?
I haven't thought about it. I mean, Buster Olney has his Baseball Tonight podcast that I've been on a couple times, and it's a great listen. That's like probably one of my favorites, but I actually haven't thought about doing anything on my own. It would probably be something even bigger than baseball. I think it would be something where we'd open it up to a lot of different topics if it was something we ever did.
Do you, and we got into this a little bit, do you envision the role of color analyst, not just in baseball, but in any sport? Do you see it trending away from ex-players and coaches? Do you think people like you and Verducci are forerunners of a major change? Or do you think in the end you're anomalies and that 25 years from now, the people who have that color position, generally speaking, will be ex-players and ex-coaches?
That's a great question because, I mean, I think for other sports, it's harder for me to understand just because I'm not in it as as far as knowing like the insider's knowledge versus the analyst knowledge. But I look at, for example, Ramona Shelburne, who's a colleague of ours at ESPN, and she's not an analyst for basketball, but there's been times she's gotten very insider with a lot of her analysis, I guess. But to me, like, it's just as great hearing her as Charles Barkley, like, because it's different, it's unique, and I think maybe not so much replacing as much as just redefining roles, like, stop having these lines of distinction of reporter versus analyst versus play-by-play versus host. Sage Steele, I think, does a good job, you know, with NBA Countdown and her role, and there's times that she brings insight, and I think just not having it be so established all the time. And I see when you talk about 25 years from now, I see it more of being a blend where we have just different perspectives. Granted, knowledgeable perspectives. We're not just letting anyone talk at one point. But I think just opening that up for a viewer, because if you're watching, I think you want to feel like it's relatable, that it talked to you in a way that you feel like you could join the conversation.
Do you want to cop to your clear bias when it comes to Ramona, given that she's a fellow Stanford Cardinal like yourself?
Yeah, Ramona and I go way back, high school days. But she's a great friend, so obviously. But she's also someone that, you know, you talk about your just formidable year, like years that you feel like you've grown as a person. And I went through those with Ramona at Stanford. She was a year above me. Huge mentor for me, too. Super, I mean, she was beyond smart. We had the same major, and she kind of helped guide me at a time when I was this 17-year-old freshman thinking that I was going to drop out my first month because I was so overwhelmed. But she's been, even now, I think I just texted her last week with a question I had on something, and she's forever that person that just constantly giving, but also just someone I put up on a pedestal as far as knowledge and what she does in the business.
Yeah, she was an intern here a long, long time ago. She's great, and it's great to see her success. She deserves it. She works hard, and she's a real credit to your employer. Makes them look good. Jessica, you get this question asked a lot, but you're always going to be tagged now with words like pioneer or however you want to frame that. And whether you like it or not, there's always pressure that comes with being the first at something and the first at something high profile. It seems to me that you've accepted this. You do a lot of talks around the country about your role and about women breaking into broadcasting. That's a long preamble to say that how do you view that responsibility? Because whether you like it or not, in the end, it really is a responsibility.
Absolutely. I think when I had so much nerves and angst kind of that I talked about earlier, most of that came from exactly that, the pressure of that responsibility. And I took that on as much as, gosh, I wish that, you know, I still want to do a baseball game. Like, I'd love it if it was just me, just like anybody else, you know. But like I kind of said earlier, there's a part of me, I guess, that craves the fact that we're doing something different here. And I want to take on that responsibility. I really do. Because messaging that I give to a lot of young girls and boys is the fact that you want to do things that aren't always easy. You want to kind of challenge yourselves in ways that you could really fail. Like, you know that failure is just right at the end of this as a possibility. And to me, those are the things you want to embrace, because to be great, like, everyone, I feel like, in life kind of wants to take the easier, I know I'm going to be successful just doing this. But I really encourage, and I have my whole life from my Olympic days, just trying to be a role model. And all of a sudden here, I was getting it thrown right in front of me. All right, put your money where your mouth is, Jess. Here we go. And I was just so afraid in the beginning that if I mess up, it's so much bigger than me. You know, I didn't want to close this door for others. And I put a ton of pressure, and it's there. It's there. You know, there's an intensity now. There's a lack of sleep. There's a lot of stuff going on, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that this is bigger than me, and I realize that, and I take it on. It's not easy, honestly, but I wouldn't want it any other way.
All right, a couple more here with Jessica Mendoza. Had a reader ask, what you found to be the most difficult aspect of broadcasting baseball. So that could be either the mechanics of just working in the booth, working with the graphics up there, or something else. I'd be curious about that too. What have you found to be the most difficult aspect of doing Sunday Night Baseball?
The fact that they play every day. I feel like that's been, you know, because even when I did college baseball, college softball, college football, any other sport, no one's playing every single day. And you got 30 teams. So I think that's probably been the biggest thing to wrap my mind around is you're never caught up, ever. I mean, even while we're talking right now, there's somebody playing, doing something. There's some news that just broke. I mean, it's constant. And for me, like being a perfectionist, I like to feel like, okay, like I know everything right now. And unless I'm up every hour of the day, it's like there's just always something happening because these teams are always going at it and things change so quickly. So you can't just take a day off. And I think in everything else I've done, like you can kind of take a day off with the teams or, you know, like you can have your travel day be a travel day. Now, no, I think that's probably the biggest challenge that I've had with baseball is knowing that every single day you gotta keep your eye on it.
Jessica, I covered the softball at the Athens games, which was really interesting to cover, particularly how the Greeks put together a team that was essentially an American team, which was kind of fascinating. But but it was really, I mean, the competition was really interesting and cool, and I think it's a sport, obviously, that the U.S. has had incredible success in. Given what has happened regarding softball at the Olympic program, what do you foresee regarding regarding softball in the Olympics as we head forward? Are you confident that come 2024, 2028, whatever that number is, that it could get back and be a stable sport in the Olympics?
Well, they're going to vote in August in Brazil for 2020, and the new leadership within the International Olympic Committee has for the first time ever changed the laws to allow a host country to pick up to three sports to be added for that particular games that would help with just the country and just everything to kind of mix it up, make it more exciting. And Tokyo is the host of 2020.
That's good.
Yeah. They've already put in their list. Yeah, it's very good. I honestly don't think you could pick a country outside of the U.S. that would be more supportive of having softball and baseball. Plus, softball and baseball have now merged as one sport. So before, there was, you know, women's softball and then men's baseball is two separate sports in the Olympic Games. Now they are one, so you can get both of them in with one inclusion. So to me, I feel like I hate saying a shoe-in with the IOC because I'm sure you know this as well as me. The thing is, they're very unpredictable and definitely not always right. But I would say 99% chance this August you will see softball and baseball get voted back in, at least for the 2020 Olympic Games in Tokyo.
That's excellent. And that's the momentum you need. And then if it's a good tournament, who knows what will happen. Plus, the U.S. probably will get an Olympics between 2024 and 2028, most likely. So that could be good. That's actually really good news for those sports. All right, final two here. Is it obviously, you're still very new in terms of being a game analyst, but if you were going to look forward both short-term and long-term, is this the position that you would like to be in broadcasting? Are you committed to trying to make this work in the booth versus outside of the booth or the studio for the long-term?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been someone that looks even more than probably 5 years ahead. I mean, I'm someone that went to Stanford, wanted to be a doctor, graduated, wanted to be a senator. Like, I've been all over the map as far as, like, where in the moment and kind of never fully anticipating where I'm going to be even 5 years from now. But I even just told my husband this week, this is something I'm absolutely not just loving, but the challenge, the growth that I still have to get to as an analyst, there's so much here. And all I really want right now is just the opportunity to continue to do this for as long as possible, which is something I don't think I've felt with anything I've ever done except for maybe playing the game of softball, wanting to do that as long as possible. But everything else I've done, I've always felt like, okay, what are we going to do next? I really am enjoying it, being an analyst in the booth, but I think mostly because I've yet to even, I feel like, get to where I need to be. I feel confident, obviously, in what I'm doing in the booth, but there is so much, and not even just myself, but I think what we can do with Sunday night. We've got a great crew, and I'm hoping we get a chance to really work together for years and build something that I think will be incredible for baseball.
All right, final one. Understanding that softball is very different than baseball, so if anybody's yapping about this, duh, no kidding. But you, again, you were an elite hitter. You reached the highest level of your particular sport. So if I was going to allow you to get in the batter's box against a pitcher in the majors right now, regardless of whether you do anything against this pitcher, who's the one pitcher you'd love to just face that pitcher going full bore just to see what it's like and how nasty stuff this particular pitcher has? And then I'll take the why as well.
I actually thought about that. It'll either be Clayton Kershaw, which I've been trying to work to, like, ask him to do that. I've been really close. Kenley Jansen told me I could stand in on him. I stood in on Jeff Samardzija of the Giants. But Clayton's the one. Yeah, I was going to say or Jake Arrieta. But I would say Clayton just because, obviously, he's a pitcher of a generation. And I want to see what that looks like. I mean, a part of me doesn't because I'm a lefty and he's a lefty, and I think it's just going to be ugly.
Yeah, that's I was thinking to myself right then. I'm like, I can't believe you picked a lefty because that may not be,
I know.
That may not be the move.
No, but like my whole life, it's like, why not go for the best? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Why not go for the? I'm probably setting myself up for failure. But to me, it's not about like going yard off them. It's about just feeling like, what does it feel like to, you know, when he throws me a slider, when he throws me that curveball, when he comes high and tight with a fastball, like, what does that feel like as a left-handed batter? Like, I want to know that. Like, I do. And I think that's something I can have for the rest of my life to understand. I mean, Clayton's on his own island as far as 50 years from now, how we'll be talking about him. And it's funny, I've been around him, and every time I am, I'm like slowly working to try to like ask him in the off season, if I can stand in on, and you know what, I don't even need a bat. Maybe I don't even bring one.
Nice.
I just want to know what it feels like to be in the box against someone of his caliber.
Yeah, like that. So then I guess old school would be Koufax and Randy Johnson. I'm just trying to think of lefties or Steve Carlton or somebody like nasty lefties. That'd be.
I don't want any part of Randy Johnson.
Yeah,
I'd be scared.
I can understand that. So same with John Kruk, as we know from that famous All-Star game.
Exactly.
All right, Jessica Mendoza has been the guest. She is a Sunday Night Baseball analyst with Dan Shulman and Aaron Boone. You also have seen Jessica on College World Series coverage, ESPN softball coverage. She previously did Baseball Tonight, and I imagine you'll see her on SportsCenter and various other ESPN properties. Jessica, of all the times I've spoken with you, I've really enjoyed it, and I wish you nothing but the best of success, and thank you very much for joining us on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Richard, thanks for letting me hang out. This was enjoyable. I liked it.
You got it. Take care, Jessica. On his podcast, On the Clock, Sports Illustrated's Chris Burke has been tracking the NFL draft every week for the entire college and pro football season. It's been all leading up to the NFL draft. For the hardcore draft fans, both before and after the draft, you cannot miss his final episodes. Search for On the Clock on iTunes, Stitcher, and now on Google Play Music. All right, my thanks to Jessica Mendoza back in the studio with Bette Marston as we wrap this up. Bette, just a couple things that struck me. One, I like when people give very in-depth thoughts about their preparation. Sometimes, like, most of the time, like, I'd say 90% of the feedback when we do this is great on that. Sometimes people will say, oh, you know, they're going too long on it. But it's like you really get a sense of what kind of preparation, if you want to be good at this job, people do. So essentially, like, it's a 7-day-a-week job for the most part for Jessica Mendoza. And then the other thing I really appreciated, again, like the responsibility that comes along with her position, because she is the first woman to do this, is big. It's a responsibility, and quite frankly, whether she wants it or not, it exists. And I think the best way is to sort of just embrace that and hope for the best. And then the last one for me is just, and I think she moderated this. The amount of stuff she really gets on social media is ridiculous, and it almost seems like a safety mechanism to not read that stuff. I would never read it if I was her Sunday night or after Sunday night.
Yeah, I agree with you on all those points, Deitch. I remember she said that Tuesday she watches the pictures those are the pictures that start before usually the Sunday starts.
Right.
Either Monday or Tuesday, one of the two. But that is something that I didn't even think about when I was thinking about her job, you know, ahead of this. It's a great point that, you know, she said she tapes them and she goes through them. And then I also liked how she said on Wednesday she takes more of a larger scope to see what's going on in baseball and doesn't just remain focused on two teams, because you can do that. I mean, if you're a reporter and you're sent out to, you know, cover a Broncos Patriots game or whatever, I mean, and even if it's a big game like that, you need to keep a larger scope on the NFL as a whole, you know, same way for this. So
it's a hard sport.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's like that baseball's a hard sport to cover on a 162 game basis, especially if you're like a national like analyst or reporter. It's just one of these days maybe we'll have only a Rosenthal or Verducci on or something like that. It's like
open invitation to all those guys
if they want. I mean, they all have their own podcast except for Verducci, but like it's just that sport to me strikes me as kind of the hardest sport to cover because it never shuts down.
Right.
I know people say the NFL is a 365-day-a-year sport, and it is, but you know what I mean? It's different because they play baseball so – it's just a game, it feels like, all the time.
There are more – yeah, you're correct. There are more baseball games than there are NFL games.
Right,
yeah.
By a lot, obviously.
But, and so, yeah, because of that, I mean
– but you know what I mean? It never feels like it feels like baseball shuts down for like 4 weeks and that's it,
mm-hmm.
you know, right. after the season.
Yeah, I will argue that their offseason is quieter than the NFL offseason.
I agree with you, but I think the reason for that is because we're, as a country, just so obsessed with every NFL news, even the minutia of it, where the transactions in baseball, would you agree, just don't get nearly the same excitement as the NFL, for whatever
reason. Right,
or even the NBA. All right, my thanks to you, Bette Marsden, for producing this podcast. Thank you again to guest Jessica Mendoza. Really appreciate people listening to the previous podcast. The Lewis Riddick numbers were unbelievable. People seem to really – maybe it's the draft, but people seem to really particularly love that that podcast. So thanks to him. Jeff Passan and Joe Drape were the guests before then. And then we got some good ones coming up, including Adnan Burke of ESPN in a couple weeks. And you can go back and listen to all the others, from Adam Schefter to Katie Nolan to Paul Heyman to Hubie Brown to many other podcasts we've done. I think we're at 53 now or something like that. My thanks to Dan Bloom of Panoply, Ryan Hunt, Paul Fichtenbaum, Chris Stone, and John Wertheim of Sports Illustrated. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the SI Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.